That's a good moment.
Oh, that was great.
Hold, please.
Honey, can you get the phone? I'm podcasting here.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Real DMC Podcast. DMC stands for Dave, Marcus, and Colin.
I got a lot of like weird artifacts on that one.
Was that a reference to the movie?
It might have been a slight reference to the movie, yes.
Okay.
Okay, yeah.
We could have done Hailing from San Jose.
Yeah, Paul Bettany is fantastic in this movie.
Yes, William. If he believes enough, a man can do anything.
My lords, my ladies, I have the pride, the privilege, nay, the pleasure of introducing to you a knight, sired by knights.
William Thatcher didn't make the rules. He was born.
I've waited my whole life for this moment.
To break them.
Yes! Thank you, I'll be here.
Well, that was different.
And you are?
Ulrich von Lichtenstein from Gelderland.
Sir Ulrich von Lichtenstein. I would have him win my heart.
You're my favorite knight.
He's won 4 tournaments in a row.
On a horse, that man is unbeatable.
You're just a silly boy with a horse and a stick.
It's called a lance. Hello?
So before we jump into the film itself, just want a quick note. So we'd love to get some feedback. So we are seeing an ongoing increase in our listenership, but we're not sure exactly who's listening. So I've said this many times, but if you guys want to find us on Twitter at RealDMC or send us an email at feedback@realdmc.com, that would be great. We'd love to hear from you. And as always, we encourage you to criticize Colin heavily.
I will give everyone plenty of material to do that.
All right. Well, today we're here to discuss Brian Helgeland's anachronistic, medieval, romantic, comedy jousting film, 2001's A Knight's Tale.
Wow.
It's hitting all the genres.
And I was going to say, it's a genre, it's a peanut buttering of genres in this film, but somehow it all kind of works for me.
A peanut buttering?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Spreading it out?
I've
not heard that phrase.
You're not familiar with that phrase?
Nope.
No.
Oh, okay, well. Okay, just by way of general introduction, so the film maintains a 6.9 on the IMDb. I was kind of surprised by that. I would have thought that maybe it was a little bit higher. I guess that is, you know, it's well-regarded, but I was surprised that even like the Rotten Tomatoes score, I think it's 56% or somewhere around there. So I was kind of expecting to see higher scores when I went and did the research.
I was surprised too, because I think it was like on Metacritic, it was like 58 out of 100.
Yeah.
And I think the one sentence summary was, once you get past the anachronism, A Knight's Tale becomes a predictable, if spirited, Rocky on horseback. And I just think that's wrong.
I don't know.
I mean, it's right, but it's like it doesn't really take into consideration that it's a lot of fun, too.
I think you guys are seeing a lot more in this movie than I saw.
Oh, it will be interesting, actually. Because
I would say the rating is, I don't have anything bad to say about it. I just don't think, like, I don't have much good to say about it either.
It would be a curious conversation then, because I actually love this movie.
I would have thought the rating is right about there. I think even 6.9, I think, is pretty high. I mean, especially compared to Natural Born Killers at a 7.1.
I mean, Jesus Christ. I mean, as a point of comparison, I would rather have to watch this movie 40 times in a row than watch Natural Born Killers once.
This is a much nicer movie. I'll give you that. Then.
However, the movie was not necessarily a big hit when it came out. So for the year 2001, it ended up at number 46 on the U.S. box office. It only made $56 million against a budget of $65 million. It did go on to make $117 million worldwide, but still, you know, not a huge hit. At the time, it was definitely considered a bit of a risk as well, because there were no real well-known or big-name actors in the film. So Heath Ledger, for example, was considered a bit of an unknown at the time. So a little bit of a dice roll on that one, I guess. Of course, I probably actually didn't see this movie until maybe after The Dark Knight, because I think I went back after seeing Heath Ledger as the Joker. I'm like, oh, I might go check out some of his other movies. But I think the marketing might have worked against this movie, and it did for me personally, because when I remember when this movie came out, I was commuting into San Francisco, and I kept walking past all these posters that had just this big picture of Heath Ledger's face, and it had a tagline that said, "He will rock you." Like, that was kind of the marketing edge, so they were going pretty heavy on the Heath Ledger, you know, persona or the fact that, you know, he was this, he's in the poster, he looks like this, you know, kind of serious dude. And that is not the energy for this movie. So when I saw those posters, I'm like, that looks like something I'm not interested in. And I did not seek it out.
I think that would have been a better movie just from like a more successful movie. I think if they did have that like kind of badass fighting action movie.
Oh, no way, man. I think it works. I think it works perfectly the way that it is.
Facepalm. Really? Exactly. So our reaction.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying the poster, I think it would have been a more successful box office film. Not like judging the film itself. Like the poster matching up to what it was trying to sell, I would have expected to be a big action box office hit for all the Renaissance Fairs fans out there.
Okay. No? I don't know what you're trying to say.
No, I'm just saying, like, it was made as an action movie, like more of a, you know.
But here's the problem, is that that's exactly what I thought it was going to be. Like, it was going to be sort of like this over-the-top, trying-to-be-cool rock and roll version of Ivanhoe, which is exactly why I did not want to see it. I thought it looked so lame when the marketing came out, which is why I didn't see it until probably around, I think, 2002 or 2003. For some reason, I just broke down. Fine, I'll watch that. And boy, was I surprised. It was not what I was expecting.
Yeah, this movie totally caught me off guard, which is probably why it maintains I have a very positive association for this film. Because I was like, I didn't really have high expectations when I put it in. And I thought I think this movie is just joyously fun. It's just pure entertainment. It's just tons of fun. It's lighthearted all the way through. So if you just want a movie that you want to just, you know, make you feel good, have some fun, laugh a little bit, I think this is a great movie that you can go to.
I'd kind of agree, but it just feels like there's dozens of movies like that. Like 10 Things I Hate About You, another Heath Ledger movie. It's very, very, like, there's a lot of teen kind of fun, nothing all that interesting movies that have a very similar vibe to this one.
Wait, have you seen 10 Things I Hate About You?
Yeah, but I think so.
You think so? But that one, I had the same reaction to 10 Things I Hate About You. I thought it was going to be just another dumb romantic teen comedy. And it really surprised me that it was so well written, so good, well acted, great story. You know, it's The Taming of the Shrew.
Right.
And so, again, I'm just like, wow, okay, I was not expecting this.
Yeah, I had a similar reaction to that film as well. So apparently, Colin and I are going to ride for Heath Ledger a little bit, and Marcus doesn't want to get on the horse.
They're fine movies, are good, enjoyable, but I don't see they aren't elevated in my view. Like, it's nothing. Wow, that's such a great movie.
Well, Marcus, what genre do you think this movie is? Like, what would you say this genre?
It's like a romantic sports movie, like a lighthearted romantic comedy. I think you could replace Jousting with football, and it'd be a teen movie.
Yeah, see, it's a sports movie, right? We were arguing about that over text, but it's definitely a sports movie.
I mean, I think it's more romance and the kind of the story of him coming up and establishing himself using sports as a vehicle for that.
Colin, what about you? What would you say? What's the genre here?
Well, it's definitely like adventure comedy romance. I mean, that's a straight genre here, but this one is a little different because of all of the anachronisms. It's kind of hard to say.
Yeah, I mean, overall,
So I don't think of it as a sports movie, honestly.
I was gonna say, I wouldn't think of it as an adventure movie. There's not much adventure at all.
Oh no, just like going across Europe from jousting tournament to jousting tournament.
Yeah, but that's the sports. Like, that's the different tournaments. That's not.
It's still adventure.
He's not like, no, because he's not like fighting dragons or he has no journey.
There are no dragons.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. But there's no like his. Traveling across Europe is not any sort of difficulty.
It's still an
adventure.
He has
no turmoil there.
Whatever.
No, it just goes from like venue to venue. It's like the Karate Kid switching from like whatever tournament to whatever tournament. It's not like...
I believe the Karate Kid only fought in one tournament. It was wasn't it the All-Valley tournament specifically?
It was the All-Valley. Yes.
Okay.
Either way, I don't see the adventure part of it. And that's what I think I expected more.
Well, let me ask, Marcus, do you think this is a well-made movie?
Yeah, I think it's good. Like, I don't think it's a bad movie at all. Like, I did enjoy it. It's a great watch. To me, it's not elevated to, maybe just because I saw it much later. This is my first time seeing it. It was a fine movie. It doesn't hold a spot in me. Like, oh, that's such a great movie. I'm going to pick it to talk about on a podcast.
I will admit that a lot of this movie is fairly formulaic. I think, though, it is well-written. It's got good actors giving good performances. But the thing that I love about it is how it surprises you with the anachronisms. And they're not just anachronisms for anachronisms' sake. They really kind of catch you off guard, and then you really sort of get into them.
Yeah.
And they're a lot of fun. And I hadn't seen that in a film before.
Not only that, but I think the dialogue is another example of where there's a lot of, you know, anachronistic dialogue that gets weaved into the conversation. And it's great because they kind of go back and forth between what you would expect to be sort of period language, and then it's something, you know, modern. And so that, you know, that going back and forth, it, sometimes in the same sentence too, right? It's, and, or, you know, like, what was it? Paul Bettany at one point says something like, "No more ados," or something like that. Like, they throw around, you know, some fun ways to use the dialogue, and it actually is a good combination of, you know, the not old English, obviously, but period language and modern language, and smashing those two things together, I think, is very successful.
Right, like when Will is talking to Jocelyn, and she says, "Call me a fox," and he says, "My foxy lady."
Right, exactly.
It's that sort of thing. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I love it. It just surprises you, and it's sort of delightful.
Yeah, I do. Delightful.
The fuck you, Marcus.
Yeah, delightful.
I will fawn you.
Yeah.
I will fawn you.
This movie is delightful, Marcus. You're just a grumpy old man.
Like I said, I enjoyed it. It's a good, easy watch. I don't put it that higher. It doesn't make a like top list for me. How's that?
It's on the 238.
It is for you?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it would not. Not even close.
Well, let me tell you just a couple things that I think really do work well in the movie. So I think the score is actually great. So the score is by Carter Burwell, and I think it's fantastic. I think it's fun. I think it's, you know, it's sort of soaring at the right point. I think it does a good job of tugging on your heartstrings on the emotional moments. So I really do like the score quite a bit.
You're not talking the music.
No, I'm not talking about the music. I'm talking about the actual score itself. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think I really.
Yeah, I didn't remember it.
Yeah, the score itself didn't really pop out to me, but I do love the choice in all of the songs in the soundtrack.
And I like how they blend I think my favorite example of the using the anachronistic modern music is in the Golden Years, like during the dance, because the way the music sort of, you know, fades out and then it fades into that, I just think that that's tons of fun.
It's really, really good. In fact, in the obituary for David Bowie, Anthony Lane from The New Yorker, who is probably one of the toughest film critics I've ever read, the man likes nothing, he referred to the film's use of that song as the best and most honest use of an anachronism that I know of.
Yeah. Well, and I like Bowie, so that doesn't hurt either.
Yeah. I think the use of modern songs in the film, that didn't bother me at all. I didn't think that was... I did read a couple of reviews that like that was a huge turnoff for people.
I think that actually hurt the film because that also showed up in the trailer for the film. Like I think they showed the people doing the wave, and I think a lot of people kind of looked at that and said, "Oh, that looks stupid," and didn't give it a chance.
That's what I'm saying. Like if it was the action movie, like if it matched the poster, I think it would have done a lot better just from an audience standpoint.
Well, it's kind of interesting because I went back and I watched the trailer because I wanted to see what led me down, you know, the wrong path in terms of the way I thought about this film before. And I think what I sort of realized was that the trailer itself, even though they do have some of the music and they do show like the fans doing the wave.
Right.
I think that it just doesn't quite communicate the whimsy that the film has. And so it just ends up looking lame. And so you really have to go and just start watching this movie to have it coalesce, right?
Yeah, I always thought it was more almost a, not necessarily a parody, but almost like a comedy like Princess Bride. Like I think that was my view before watching it, was is bordering on that type of film, which is not quite parody, but it's not quite serious either.
I think the marketing for this movie was all over the place and really it really did set it up for failure.
Yeah, and it's a tough movie to market, I would imagine, right? Because it's it's definitely, it was something, particularly with the blending of the modern music and the timeline in the movie that hadn't seen that before.
If you remember from our Princess Bride soundtrack podcast,
did you cut a soundtrack to the side? Did you see the Marcus Kasperzak jam session?
On the Princess Bride podcast, we had talked about the same issue of them marketing Princess Bride and it being a lot of trouble with, okay, is it an adventure movie? Is it a comedy? Is it, so very, very similar. I don't know if it's just the period of the Renaissance is a difficult one to portray in movies too. I was trying to think of what are some really good kind of old English Renaissance movies? And there's not a big list
I'm not sure that's
like serious films for them.
It's not really a genre that I would run towards.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's also a strike against it too. Jousting and all this kind of Renaissance fair material is just kind of played too.
Would you at least say this is your favorite jousting film?
It is my favorite jousting film, but I do think I like the video game Joust better than the movie.
Oh, well, yeah, there were no ostriches in this film, I guess.
It's true.
Yeah. a couple of things that I like about it. I do think the sound design in this film is actually really good. The sword strikes and the jousts and, you really kind of feel the hits. I think the sound is very effective and the horse charging and all that. So I think the sound design is really well done.
I don't have a lot to say about the production of the film.
Really? Because I actually think the jousting sequences themselves in terms of the filming. So the photographer was Richard Greatrex. I think it's actually pretty impressive. I mean, some of the footage they got.
I was surprised the budget was as high as it was. And I don't know, because $65 million, it doesn't seem like it'd be that large of a budget for the film. So I don't know if it was all in the jousting and setting up those scenes and or what. No, but I thought it was well done. It was believable.
Well, so Colin, this was your pick specifically. So what was it that made you decide to pick it besides me sort of steering you in that direction during the podcast?
You didn't steer me in that direction. It was something that I was already thinking about.
Okay.
But I picked this movie because this happens to be the 665th anniversary of the Battle of Poitiers.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, we were actually going to a celebration later this week.
you got your mead.
Happy 665th Poitiers.
Yeah. No, it's just, it happens to be the 20-year anniversary of the movie, so.
Okay.
It just sort of popped up, and I was like, I really love this movie. I've seen it several times. Now would be a good time to do it.
Well, I support your choice.
Yeah, getting back to your the jousting not standing out, and that's why one of the reasons I don't see it as much a sports movie, because I didn't think the jousting, it was pivotal to the movie, but it's not the main focus. Like, those aren't the key scenes, and I think if it was, if that was a bigger focus, those would have been more substantial scenes and more, I think it would have stood out more. And they're fine. I think they're done really well, and it's excellent.
I think they're a big part of the movie. But yeah, it's not, this is a jousting movie.
This is a movie,
he's trying to...
Change his stars,
exactly. And he just happens to be able to do that through the jousting. I will say, I thought this movie, again, was very well made. I think they did a great job with the jousting scenes. I really, in fact, love what they did with the lances. Every time they sort of crash and disintegrate in the air, it's really cool. It's very, very, very well done. The armor looks all really good.
My one bit of research, do you know how they did the lances?
I did. Why don't you tell us?
They used uncooked linguine to make splinters without having to hurt the actors.
Yep, and so balsa wood. They used a bunch of balsa wood on the lance itself.
Yeah, they hollowed them out. They scored the wood. They put balsa wood tips, and then they threw in a bunch of linguine. Balsa splinters and linguine. Dried linguine.
Yeah.
I thought that was very inventive.
Yeah, all that being said,
they weren't limp noodles.
Yeah. I actually think the fact that they were really jousting, because that's the other thing, is that originally their intent was they thought they could use camera tricks and do some stuff to not necessarily show full on jousting. What they realized is they actually had to go and find people to do the stuntmen to do actual jousting. And so they're really doing it. And there were a bunch of stuntmen that actually got pretty hurt during the movie, right? One guy actually...
It looked pretty brutal.
One guy had his jaw, his jaw was kind of ripped backwards a little bit, and he had to get his mouth sewn up. And, so they were actually... And some of the stunts, the guy's going off the horse and, sliding on the rail and then hitting the ground, I mean, that's some pretty impressive stunt work, I think.
It was pretty brutal. The I think one of them, I read that Ledger did get knocked out in one of them.
Oh, did he?
Or maybe it was the stuntman for Heath Ledger got knocked out in one of the opening. They kept the footage in. He actually
Yeah, because apparently Heath Ledger wanted to do some of the jousting himself in terms of doing the stunts, and the studio said no way because they thought he was an up-and-coming actor and they didn't want him to get hurt or probably get his face mangled.
You're far too pretty to get hurt.
Exactly.
Yeah. The director did get a injury too that I read. He Heath Ledger, while playing out his scene, ended up knocking out a couple of teeth of the director accidentally.
No, really?
What do you do?
I think he was like doing like some sorting or like pantomiming something. He ended up hitting, like holding a sword, and he ended up hitting the director in the mouth.
Whoops.
That's kind of crazy.
Whoops.
By the way, speaking of the director, when the film started, I was like, oh, because I'd been a huge fan of LA Confidential, and it's like written, produced, and directed by Brian Helgeland. So I think immediately I was like, okay, well, maybe this isn't going to be as bad as I thought.
Well, he has an interesting filmography. He hasn't actually directed that many movies.
He's primarily a writer.
Yeah, I think 42 was the last movie that I saw that he directed. So just a couple other production notes. The film was shot in Czechoslovakia on location. So apparently they built a bunch of sets in one location, and they didn't move around a lot, so it was just all in one spot. And apparently when they were getting ready to film, Brian Helgeland told the studio that they needed 2 additional weeks of prep time to bring the actors on site and so they could go through the script and do rehearsals. And apparently what they actually did was they brought the actors on site and then they drank for 2 weeks and partied their ass off. And the end result of that was that the actors formed a pretty close bond. And I actually think that shows up in the film because I think the chemistry between the characters is pretty great.
That also explains the $65 million budget.
So. Maybe, yeah. Depends what they were drinking.
Yeah, no, the chemistry between Will, Watt, and Roland is really good.
It's great. Yeah. They feel very natural with each other, and they feel very natural with each other from the very first scene, which I think is pretty interesting. So you kind of bought into the fact that these are people that have been with each other for a long time. All right, you want to talk cast?
No.
Ever the contrarian, Marcus.
Well, there was one, since we sort of went over the reviews, and I don't think we had anyone who gave it a good review. However, Roger Ebert did give it 3 out of 4 stars.
That's good.
And he said that the anachronisms made little difference. He said that the director himself pointed out that an orchestral score would be equally anachronistic since orchestras hadn't been invented in the 1400s. It's a very good point, that you just don't think about. This is, people are so used to a certain type of score for a period film.
Yeah, lots of, what is that high-pitched sound that you always hear in the medieval? Like, what's the instrument that's making that sound? Is it a flute?
Like a flute?
It's like a little tiny flute of some sort.
Or a lyre.
Fiddle.
Yeah.
A lyre, that's it.
Yeah. So from a cast standpoint, I guess we can start with Heath Ledger. So I think he's pretty great in this movie. I think he has just tons of charisma. And I like his character. I like how he interacts with people. I like and one of the things that I like about him is some of the up and down emotion that he has in relation to Jocelyn. He gets kind of pissed off and frustrated about stuff. I just think that I think he's having a good time with the character.
I personally think his best scenes are amongst the his mates, because they are just, they do have so much great chemistry together, and when he convinces them to invest their money in this venture to go on and make money by jousting, I think it's really, really good. I mean, you just see all of this charm and charisma just right from the outset. I was looking through his filmography, and the movies that stand out are this one, 10 Things I Hate About You, obviously Brokeback Mountain and The Dark Knight. But then I realized I really hadn't seen any other films. And
Some of those other films? Because I guess I can't think of any right now.
That's the thing. I hadn't even heard of them, so I don't have them up. So I'm not going to tell you what they are.
Well, he's got some other ones. Please. He has Black Rock. He did The Patriot before. That was the
Mel Gibson.
I don't like that. Monsters Ball, Lords of Dogtown, which I don't really remember him in.
Oh, he's good. He's the actual. He's the guy. He's the owner of the store, I think, like the skate shop or the surf shop.
The Brothers Grimm, Casanova, Canada. There's a lot that are not that well known. The Order, Ned Kelly.
The Four Feathers.
Yeah. Both like Monsters Ball and Lords of Dogtown, I would not have I would not known like, oh, he's in.
Yeah, they must have been like, you know,
smaller roles or yeah. just.
Yeah,
it's like Brokeback. I thought was more his kind of breakout role of kind of arriving at Hollywood.
Okay, well, I guess we can move on from Heath. So, how about? Yeah.
I think he's great. Like, he's a fantastic actor. Like, it's really too bad that we didn't get more.
Yeah. So so Rufus Sewell plays
Rufus Sewell.
What's his name? Sewell.
Sewell.
Sewell. Sorry, Rufus Sewell.
He missed his calling as like, and maybe he still has a chance to be like a young Christopher Walken in many roles, because he does a great job just with his his voice. I don't know if he's trying to be like Christopher Walken, his eyes, his voice, numerous times. I'm just like, oh man, he's like,
oh, he's
doing a great job.
He is like one of those all time, just, he really should just be a character actor. I think he's got a great face and a great voice and a great delivery. But when I was looking again through his filmography, I realized, other than like Dark City and this movie, there's not much that really jumps out at me. I mean, he's been in like a lot of TV. I mean, he's just like I just sort of remember him from a lot of smaller roles, but he always stands out to me. I'm always going, oh, look, it's Rufus Sewell.
His portrayal in this film, actually, I think he makes a great villain. So of course, you know, he's doing all the, it's kind of that mustache twirling. He's got the dark armor, the black horse, they just make him a dick, right? He's just a dick through and through. So, and I think he carries it off really well.
He does, and he does it without being like over the top villainous.
Right, he's got that quiet menace.
He's right near the top.
Yeah.
He but doesn't push past.
No. Yeah, he's not a farce of it. He is pushing the envelope on it for sure.
Well, and then I'll go to the who I think is probably the MVP, which is Paul Bettany as Geoffrey Chaucer. I love Paul Bettany in this movie.
Yeah, he's my MVP too, and this I think is a breakout role. I did not know who Paul Bettany was, but then after I watched this film, I was always like, "Oh, Paul Bettany!" Like,
yeah, I have the same.
Oh, look, it's Paul Bettany, and then he was in what, like Master and Commander and A Beautiful Mind, and then of course, as we all know and remember him, as the voice of Jarvis in the MCU, in the Iron Man movies.
Well, and then he eventually became the Vision.
He's Vision.
Yeah, but he's all like silvery and red, so I don't really give a shit.
Yeah, he's fantastic in this. Just
looks like Ultraman. And...
You don't like silvery red dudes?
No, he looks like Ultraman to me.
Yeah, I think the Vision was a character they brought in the Avengers. They're like, man, no one really cares about him that much, so we can bring him on and we can give us somebody to kill. So we can create a moment of empathy without really losing one of the major characters.
He's got too many weird powers that just doesn't make sense. It's like one of those people you can do whatever you want with. He can, and he's paired up with Scarlet Witch, who can do the same thing. Like, she can just control every atom in the universe. What's the problem?
I'm coming over to your side, Marcus.
No, but Paul Bettany in this, his speeches, his just energy he brings, he's just hilarious.
You know, what I kept wanting him to say during his speeches was, the Ayatollah of rock and roll. Like, I kept wanting him to drop that line. I just kept expecting it to roll off his tongue at any point when he was doing the introductions.
The Ayatollah of rock and roll.
Yeah, it's really funny. Like the intros too are just so like, I don't know, worldwide wrestling or whatever. The like just the over the top, just fun.
Well, you know, it's funny because he did not read any Chaucer or read anything about Chaucer in preparation for this role. And what he did do was watch Vince McMahon. From the WWE or F, whatever it was at the time.
Yeah.
And that's how he modeled some of his stuff in terms of the engaging with the crowd and, you know, kind of pumping everybody up.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's totally sort of shows.
It's great.
Yeah. He's like part Michael Buffer and part Don King.
Right.
Yeah.
And a smartass, which is great.
Yeah. Just from the first time he comes on, he's like totally naked walking down the road. He's just like,
talk about an entrance. he just walks past him. He's like, morning.
By the way, did you know that was apparently the very first scene that he shot, and it was in front of a bunch of extras as well? And he's like, yeah, okay, I'll do it. Just pretty casual. Good for you, Paul Bettany. So we have James Purefoy as Colville, or apparently also the Prince who?
The Black Prince Edward of Wales.
Prince Edward, yeah. And I love him in this role. And some of the back and forth that he has, particularly the stockade scene, I think is just fantastic. So I think he's a lot of fun.
Yeah, Purefoy is one of my favorites every time I see him show up. I loved the HBO series Rome, and he played Mark Antony in that. And he's really, really good.
Yeah, I never saw Rome. I know, didn't it kind of Didn't they end up stopping it while it was still in the middle of the story? Somebody complained about it, I guess.
It cost too much money. It was just the budget was like ridiculous. But that was a really fun series.
How many seasons was it?
I think it was maybe two or three.
Yeah, okay. So then we have Mark Addy as Roland. And I believe that he is Robert Baratheon from Game of Thrones. Is he not?
You believe correctly.
Yeah, same. I was going to say, same actor. That's what I recognize him from. Like, what did I see him in most recently? And maybe it's been a while, but that's what I associated him with.
Yeah, Mark Addy's been in everything. He's just like another just veteran British actor.
And then Alan Tudyk is Watt, who is really funny in this movie. Just on the verge of punching anybody at any given second. So just barely keeping his rage under control at all times. That's a fun character.
Yeah, I love Alan Tudyk a lot.
And then so I think that's it for the main actors that I recognize. I mean, you also had
that you recognized.
Well, just in terms of immediately, you know, like immediate recognition, you have So Shannon Sossaman plays Jocelyn. So I've seen her pop up in things occasionally, but there's maybe not another movie that I immediately think about in relation to her.
There is a very good reason why you would not have recognized her when you saw this film, and that is that this was her first film. She was like
23,
basically spotted by the casting director and thought, oh my God, like you should be in this role opposite Heath Ledger. And I remember hearing that story at that time and then thinking, oh man, like really? Seriously? Like this total unknown is going to be in this movie? It's going to be a disaster.
She did a great job with that, I thought.
She's really good. Yeah. She's really good.
I wouldn't have guessed it's her first movie.
Well, apparently the casting director or the director said to the costumer, just, hey, go nuts, have some fun, because her outfits are pretty fun, pretty interesting, actually. You know, she's wearing a lampshade on her face at one point, you know, that kind of hat. She has that weird, like, arrow hat made of velour or whatever. So some of her outfits are interesting.
The lampshade?
Yeah, she has the lampshade on her face when she's watching one of the jousting.
No, I know, because I love that outfit because it is so anachronistic itself. Right. So now you've got, because she just totally is reminding me of like 1960s Audrey Hepburn in that outfit.
Yeah, totally.
And that, which is completely not this period.
Well, and she has colored hair that changes throughout the movie too. So, yeah, I mean, she has a very modern look to her character.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. Yeah. And then some of the hairstyles too, are just like sort of like Asian influences. And yeah, really, really fun. I'm glad they sort of like let people go crazy a bit.
Yeah, it was. It's fun.
Like at the banquet, right? When they show up together, she and Will look very bohemian, like in their outfits.
Right. Totally.
And that's, to me, that's what like kind of makes it feel a little like teenage rom com is that sort of playing. Like you could see her coming to school in different outfits at all these different events or whatever it might be. Right. Like.
But
it definitely has that feeling to it.
Do you think that it feels like they're playing for that, or that, because that's not how I feel at all.
No. It doesn't feel like they're trying. I'm just saying it fits. Like if you took this whole script and switched it to be at a high school and the guy's a quarterback for the football team, it would completely work the same. Maybe he's a freshman. He's trying to come in and make the team or something like that or whatever.
Well, of course. Yeah. No,
it would all work exactly the same.
Of course it would.
Like all the relationships, his friends and all that kind of stuff would be very, very similar. That's all I'm saying. Like,
well, it's a tried and true formula.
Yeah. It's done really well and it does work, but it also, it's not as, I don't know. That's where it doesn't feel as special.
Wow.
All right. Well, why don't we move on to,
there's just two more people I wanted to.
Well, I was going to say, is Laura Fraser one of them? Because I think it's, yes. You know, we need to point out Kate as the blacksmith who joins the group. I think her character is slightly underserved in this movie because, you know, she never really gets the, she doesn't kind of get full squad participation rights, it doesn't seem like. So.
Yeah, I thought they didn't use, I think they had one too many people involved. Like, I think she could have helped him out a little bit more. Like, she did help him with the armor and made
she made high-tech armor. Come on.
Yeah.
Oh, no, she did a good job of it. I guess they show her doing things, but I'm just, it feels like maybe they could have given her, you know, more dialogue or her character more to do.
I kept waiting for her to maybe, like, become a love interest for one of the other guys.
Yeah.
It seemed like they're trying that with Roland. Like, there's a couple moments you hear them talking in the background and kind of, like, another potential storyline there, but they didn't really go with it.
I thought that Roland and Christiana could potentially end up together because they were talking.
Was, Was that the advisor or whatever?
Jocelyn's
aide or whatever.
Her lady-in-waiting. I don't know. Do you guys know who Laura Fraser is? Like, do you know her from anything else?
No, she looked familiar, but I didn't.
Yeah, I mean, she's recognizable to me, but I'm not sure from what.
Are you guys Breaking Bad fans?
Yes.
No.
She's Lydia.
She's Lydia?
Yeah.
Oh, you mean at the end, the one where she's like the money, the broker at the end for when they're making the drugs inside the houses?
Yes, she's the one who's at the company, the corporation that gets them all the industrial grade chemicals.
So
she facilitates, I forget the name of the company.
Yeah, so I think he poisons her at the end, right?
He does, yes.
Yeah, okay.
That's Lydia.
Yeah. Yep, okay.
Yeah.
That's why, maybe that's what I recognize her from. So then, okay, Colin, that would be anything else you want to point out?
Yeah, Christiana was played by Berenice Bejo, which I just had to look her up because I knew the name, but she didn't look that familiar. And then I realized, she was the female lead in The Artist, the film that won, the sort of silent film that won Best Picture.
You mean that stupid Oscar grab film that they made?
If that's what you want to call it, but yeah.
Sorry, Oscar bait would be better, I guess.
Oscar bait, yeah.
Yeah.
I saw it. It was good.
I saw it.
Not great.
It was okay.
I'll never see it again.
Yeah, exactly. It was an interesting experiment.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, did that film win Best Picture? It did?
It did, yeah.
Yeah, that seems like a throwback Hollywood Academy bullshit pick, but whatever. All right, well, Marcus and or Colin, wouldn't you like to hit us with a quick plot summary?
After his master dies, a peasant squire, fueled by his desire for food and glory, creates a new identity for himself as a knight.
So what do you think?
Sol Ulrich.
So what do you think on the split with that was in terms of food or glory? How much of it was food and how much of it was glory?
It's all glory.
It's all glory? 90% glory?
I don't
glory,
think he was 10% not
food?
Yeah. Whereas
Watt.
You know, Watt was all like 95% food.
He wanted food.
Roland wanted some food. He was like, come on. Big boy's got to eat. It does follow the very standard sports movie.
Yeah, it's the underdog hero's journey.
Yeah, and you have like the bad team, and then he has training montages and comes up, and it does have a very, very sports movie line through it.
It does, yeah, absolutely. So
you have that the final contest at the end. He has to pull out his trick play to win it all, which I would say jousting with no armor is a pretty good, pretty bold move.
Bold move or bad idea?
Yeah.
I'm thinking bad idea.
Oh, man.
Great heroic moment, though, at the end there.
Oh, man. But.
All right. Well, anything else you guys want to say before we jump into it?
Jump in.
All right. So opening the film does basically showcase what Colin just discussed, which is there's a group of squires of the knight, and the knight is dead against a tree. And there's a pretty funny moment where they're trying to get him back to the tournament so that he can compete and so that they can have some food. That's really what it comes down to. And Watt in particular is a little bit frustrated with the dead knight, so he's just over there kicking the body. So I like that. And then
I have a question.
Yeah.
Because they're like plugging their noses. I assume because like he stinks because he's dead. But when exactly did he die? Like,
it can't be that.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, maybe he shit in his armor or something when he was dying. I don't know because
that could be. Yeah.
If he's if he was just in the tournament a few minutes ago, it's unlikely that rigor mortis or decomposition would have started to the point where he would smell right. That bad. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And I do like so Heath Ledger's character. So Will decides, well, he's just going to impersonate the knight, and so he throws the armor on, and then this is where they head to the tournament grounds. And all of a sudden, We Will Rock You is playing, and you have the whole crowd sitting there clapping along and banging their hands on the boards. And initially, I remember when I'm like, wait, what the fuck is this? Like, there's a little bit of that for a half second, yeah. And then you're like, well, all right, you can go one of two ways. You can either be kind of, this can weird you out in terms of the anachronism and the collision, or you can just kind of roll with it. And if you roll with it, it ends up being a lot of fun because you see all this stuff that is very modern day sports being shown in the crowd, right? So you have like the shirtless guys that are drinking, you have people that have face painting, you have, and then it's actually even kind of funny because the song ends right when you see these trumpeters and they put their horns down. So I thought that was actually done really well. So I think that opening scene is actually quite fun.
Yeah, the director, how do you say his name? Helgeland?
Helgeland.
Helgeland? The director was saying that he used the modern music as a way to show the emotion of what people back then would be feeling. So if he played like Renaissance music and it's all like flutes and whatever, it wouldn't really capture the feeling to a modern audience what the people back then were feeling. So using modern music to invoke that kind of emotion from the audience of like, okay, this is what they're feeling when they're watching this. It may not be realistic, and he wasn't going for any sort of, you know, artistic or realistic piece. He wasn't trying to like, it's not a documentary of any sort.
This could have gone really bad when Queen starts playing. But then like you see the fans in there clapping in time with the music, right? And you see, oh, people are totally into this. Like they're participating in this. They're actually playing the music. They're doing the wave to the music. They're totally into this. Yeah. And because of that, it's like, okay, wait a minute. I was not expecting that. Because you've seen a bunch of movies that have played like rock music in contrast to this very, you know, this different period.
Right.
And sometimes it works and a lot of times it doesn't. With this, I hadn't seen before. This was definitely new. And at that point, I was like you. Okay. Okay. I'm going to go with this.
Yeah, I'm in. I'll give it a chance. And then what I do like, by the way, so the William character, so he ends up winning the tournament, but he gets a hit on his helmet. And so his faceplate is all smashed in. And so then he goes and he stands in front of the local, you know, regal official and is being awarded his championship for the tournament. And his helmet is all dented in. So he uses the excuse that he can't get his helmet up. But I just like that look where the helmet's all caved in and he's kind of standing there and he can't really see. So I just think that's pretty funny.
It's funny.
It is a good moment. Yeah.
It just reinforces sort of the lighthearted tone. You know what you're in for at that point.
Yeah, but go ahead.
I was going to say, when his friends, like, I think he took the initial joust to the face and his friends were like, is he okay? He's breathing. He's okay. Like, it was pretty funny. Yeah.
And it's also good because he took a lance to the face and he stayed on his horse. And so Sir Ector won. So it's not like totally unbelievable. Like he, you know, went in and immediately, won his first
jousting
match.
Took somebody off the horse. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No. It's like, well,
he could take a hit.
Yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah. So he does take a hit. And then, so that inspires him to want to keep rolling with it. And so he ends up, this is where he gets into the argument with his friends. So Watt and Roland, he's trying to convince them to stick with the idea that he can impersonate the knight and they can go to tournaments and they can, you know, win a lot of money because, and the argument at that time is they have 15, was it 15 florins, silver florins? And Roland and Watt just want to take the money and leave at that point. But of course, he's able to convince them to go all in on this scheme. And then what follows is them doing some training. And so you see, you know, the typical
we're
training.
We're going to have a montage.
It's a montage, yeah. So it's a montage, and he's riding on the horse, and you know, he gets a little bit better with the jousting. They do have some creative things they do. So at one point, they're towing him in a boat. So I assume that he's practicing his balance, you know, a la the Karate Kid. And, you know, of course, he ends up getting a little bit better as he goes. And it's a little bit, you know, this is the total Rocky montage. This reminded me a little bit of the Rocky IV montage specifically, where he starts doing things and then, you know, he's lifting rocks and, you know, it just keeps going. So, because it was the, at least in Rocky IV, he was using the old school techniques, if you remember, while Drago was going all high tech. So,
right.
Yeah. Was he like running in the snow and stuff?
Yeah. He's running in the snow. Like he's carrying, you know, lifting carts, lifting rocks, you know, lifting a box, stood on his head.
Yeah. And the montage is to the strains of Low Rider, which it just works. Somehow it just works.
Low Rider.
Yeah, so it's funny because I wasn't sure about the Low Rider part of it in the beginning, but then as it kind of keeps going in the montage, I do think it works really well. It's sort of funny.
Because they keep doing this sort of the same thing.
The repetition.
Over and over. The repetition and not succeeding, failing spectacularly, and then suddenly, you know, like over and over, finally succeeding. Yeah. It just works.
No, and then this is where, so they decide, okay, yeah, they're going to go for it. He's completed his training, and this is where they're out on the trail heading to the next tournament location, and this is where they meet Chaucer. And it's just so Chaucer comes walking along, Paul Bettany, you know, just buck naked, and he says that he's trudging. And I love the back and forth on that. That's a good intro to the style of his dialogue and his wit, because they ask him what he's doing, and he just says he's trudging, and then he defines what trudging is and why it's a good thing to do. But one thing he says is that he's a writer and he can create anything, and one of the things he mentions is patents of nobility, and that obviously gets Will's attention. And he's like, okay, well, you know, can you create me some fake credentials? Because what Chaucer tells him is that at the next tournament site, he's going to have to show up with full papers if he's going to be allowed to participate.
I just love how they're having this conversation with Chaucer while he's completely naked and apparently just really doesn't have any shame about it.
Nope.
Yep. Yeah, his dialogue's really, really well written. Like the whole role is great. I think he had the line of it. He's taking an involuntary vow of poverty.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, it is really well written. I was like so not expecting like Geoffrey Chaucer to be in this movie. So it's a nice little twist in the storyline.
Yeah. Yeah, and then what's
well the he does have a poem, his like the start of the Canterbury Tales, which I know nothing about Chaucer, but the first tale in it is the Knight's Tale. So it is very, 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 very loosely based.
All I know about the Canterbury Tales is what I learned from Hyperion.
You can learn a decent amount actually through Hyperion.
Dave, whenever you want, regale us with your knowledge of Chaucer. I'm really sort of interested in hearing about this.
There's obviously nothing that happens in this movie that is really directly related to any of the tales in the Canterbury Tales, but one of the things that happens is Chaucer comes, you know, face to face with the summoner and the partner. Right. And so he sits there and he thrashes him and he says, he's like, you're insulting me now, whatever. But he's like, I'm going to eviscerate you in fiction for the rest of your life. And of course, there is a partner's tale and a summoner's tale. And one of them, the guy gets a hot poker in his ass and I forget which one it is. But so Chaucer does, in fact, get his revenge. And they also make a reference. I think it's the last story in the Canterbury Tales. That's about Chanticleer the rooster. And there's a one reference in the movie and I forget exactly where it is, where I'm like, oh yeah, okay, they're doing some sort of a play on that, but it's pretty buried, right? There's nothing really here that says, okay, this is some sort of a, you know, I don't think they went deep on Canterbury Tales references. So
the only little bit I read was that the historians, there's a year of Chaucer's life that they have not accounted for.
Oh.
And supposedly this movie is that year that is unknown to the historians.
Yeah, right. So Helgeland said that this is supposed to take place in around 1370s, which is during that decade where he was sort of dropped out of sight. This is like a reimagining. Now, they also talk about the Battle of Poitiers. I mean, they just mention it because they're, you know, talking about, well, where is Adhemar? Well, he's off at the Battle of Poitiers, but that took place in 1356. So I'm not quite sure, you know, when this is supposed to take place, but it's definitely after the end of the Black Death, which ended in, I think, around, 1353 or something like that?
You're such a Poitiers head, man. You're just like the Battle of Poitiers. It's all about that for you.
It's all about Poitiers.
Poitiers, sorry. And yeah, you and your Renfair crowd get together and reenact that once every couple months, right?
Totally. Yeah, totally.
You can also, I think they mentioned the Pope being French, and you can also try and date it based on French popes. But
all right, so they do get to the first tournament, I guess it would technically be the second tournament. So it's, I think, Rouen. And there is a nice continuation of the Chaucer character here because he is introducing the patents of nobility. And of course, he's just overwhelming them with bullshit. So he stands there and he starts going, he's like his fifth generation, sixth generation. And the guys are like, enough, enough. I get it. so it's a nice little, it's a nice kind of introduction of where the Chaucer character is going to go when he gets up and does the huge introductions and all the bullshit he's just layering on. So he's a great bullshit artist in this film.
His first speech when he introduced Ulrich. Thank you.
It's not written down anywhere. They only say it.
I know. Anyways, continue on. I think it's actually after the fighting montage.
Well, so
cut that piece.
Yeah. So Chaucer, you know, he's walking back to, you know, I think he's to let him know that he's good for the tournament, and he sees some dice being played, and so you get the tie into what Chaucer, his involuntary poverty vow was actually because he's got a gambling problem, which comes up a couple times in the movie. He likes his gambling.
That he does.
He also, apparently, he's not very.
Kind of funny.
Apparently, he likes to bet his clothes.
He does. Yeah. That's not sure. I mean, how much would a set of clothes actually, how far would they get you in a game? Probably not much. A couple of hands at best.
Maybe get an ante.
Yeah. So the other thing is you have Sir Ulrich. So he's riding through town and he's singing. So apparently I think he's just happy that he's going to be able to be in the tournament. And he's just in a good mood. And then this is where he sees Jocelyn. And this is where Jocelyn is wearing that the weird arrowhead velour outfit. This is out of all of her outfits, I think this one does not work. This is, I think, her worst outfit, in my opinion.
Do you know why? It's the most period appropriate. that hat is actually very period.
That hat is shitty. I'm not sure if it's period or not, but I'll take your word for it. I just don't like that hat.
Yeah. No.
Fuck that hat.
I completely agree.
Fuck that hat. Yeah. Yeah. Especially, I mean, you know, she's all of her other outfits, she looks very attractive, right? And the whole thing kind of works. And that one, it just, I don't know, kind of squishes her face. I just don't like it.
You know why?
Why?
Because it's period.
It's period. I think you mentioned that. All right. So then there's kind of a fun moment where, so Will is excited, and he starts following her, and he ends up riding his horse directly into church. So that's kind of a fun scene. And then I do like, the priests come over and the officials in the church, whoever they are, and they shoo the horse out. But then there is some pretty funny back and forth dialogue with the bishop or something. And he talks about how she's cursed because she's so beautiful. And she says something like, oh, she hates the fact that she's cursed with this face. Like, and so she's just basically playing the dialogue back and forth between the two of them, I think is pretty fun. But then what's great is he puts out his hand for her to kiss the ring, and she just looks at it and goes, oh, that's nice. So,
yeah, no, this is again, what makes this a well-written script, because it's sort of playing with your expectations, because you'd think, like, oh, it's a period movie. Like, oh, she's supposed to kiss his ring. And she's like, oh, look at this, this is really nice.
Yeah. Well, it also gives her the streak of independence, and she's not taking any bullshit. She's not going to just go with the need to be
her sarcastic response to him, and he thinks it's completely serious about she wishes she wasn't born with such a beautiful face.
Yeah,
no, it's good.
She's
stuff.
Got this. She's got the sass of a high schooler. Like, is the.
You just think this is a high school movie.
I don't think this is a high school type romance movie.
Like, that's totally what it is.
The bishop is the principal.
Exactly. You got it now. You're with me.
So then the other thing that happens during this scene is, so Will is actually, he is trying to compete in two events. So the joust and then the sword. And he's pretty good with the sword. So there's a montage of sword fighting to the being done to taking care of business as the song. So that's kind of funny. And he ends up defeating all of his extras. And at the end, I think Chaucer either crowns him champion at the end, and or he's doing his introduction, actually. And what's funny is that all the Czech extras that are sitting there, they didn't understand what Paul Bettany was saying. And so he gets done with his speech and the crowd doesn't react. And then you see Roland kind of, react. And then all of a sudden everybody cheers. That was an unplanned event, actually, that they ended up keeping in the film.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. His speech, too, is so fantastic. Like,
it is a good speech.
Behold, my Lord Ulrich, the rock, the hard place. Like a wind from Geldland, he sweeps by, blown far from his homeland in search of glory and honor. We walk in the garden of his turbulence.
First met him on a mountain in Jerusalem. He just keeps going on and on. It's like hilarious.
In Greece, he spent a year in silence just to better understand the sound of a whisper.
Yeah.
All of his speeches are really, really good.
Well,
and the whole crowd is like bought in, like, oh, what is he saying? Like, it's hilarious.
Well, and I love I love some of the things that just get layered in along the way, like, the protector of Italian virginity and just things right. like that. So again, I just kept waiting for that Ayatollah of rock and roll, but did not get it.
Yeah.
This is the other thing I think here. This is where Count Adhemar is actually introduced. So this is where Jocelyn is sitting in the stands and she has the lampshade over her face. And it is kind of nice because they use Adhemar as a way to give you the exposition on the jousting rules. Because, so as a viewer, you understand.
Oh, you weren't familiar with the rules of jousting?
I did not know how to score jousting appropriately. So, because I think modern jousting doesn't really carry the same rules as they did in the medieval times. So, like my jousting league, it's a totally different scoring system. So the other thing that you see here is Adhemar sits down and it just, his whole, he's a smarmy dick, right? Because Ulrich or William goes over and he's, you know, he wants to kind of engage with Jocelyn. And so actually, Marcus, this is a little high school because Adhemar becomes a high school bully for a minute, right? So he shits all over what he's wearing, right? So he rags on his armor. There's some other put down he gives him, I forget, but
he's trying to impress the the top girl.
Yeah, so he's trying to impress Jocelyn, so immediately you just don't like Adhemar. He does a good job of establishing himself as an asshole right from the get go.
He's just such a condescending dick.
Yeah.
He does a great job with it. Did you guys see the same Christopher Walken kind of crossover, or is that just me?
I can see it. I didn't see I was watching, but I can see it now.
I don't really get Christopher Walken, actually, as a comparison.
Nah, he definitely had that kind of vibe to it.
I think it's a very young. Sort of the way he speaks, his eyes do play
his eyes, part. Yeah.
And
he's got big eyes.
But again, it's like, you know, if you took away that British accent, and he could do it. Like, I bet he does actually a pretty good Christopher Walken impression.
What the fuck is a Jawa?
So the other thing that you see here, this is where Adhemar takes the field for the first time. And the character, his full character design when he's in his jousting outfit is pretty great because he has the dark armor, the black horse, the horse looks intimidating. You know, they just give him the full, he is the black hat villain in this. So they give him the whole look. And I think it's pretty great. He ends up having he goes up against Will and he hits Will and knocks Will's helmet off. And this is where, he's stunned by the hit. And so there's a brief flashback that occurs where, I think this is where he, as a kid, flashes back to standing on some stockades, or his dad lifts him up to on some stockades so he can actually watch knights go through the town. So you're starting to get a little bit of the backstory in terms of what happened to Will when he was a little kid with his dad.
A couple things that happened before that. So William goes up against Thomas Colville, right? So this is something that will take place, be very important later in the film.
Right.
So he gives him mercy and lets him keep his honor by going up on the last joust, because Colville's hurt. And so the last joust is just sort of like, you know, tip lances and it's a draw. But Ulrich wins anyway. So that sets you up for the end of the film.
Yeah.
But also something very, very important that I wanted to point out was right at the beginning of that scene when they first, you know, show the tournament ground, there's a vendor walking by and he's saying, "Cat's meat, hot wine." I nearly shit myself.
Yeah, that's they have the equivalent of the was it the concessions that you'd get
at a
sports event? Yeah, so that's pretty funny.
Cat's meat and ooh, what better on a hot day than some hot wine?
I'm gonna chase down some cat's meat with some hot wine. Delicious. So Will is receiving the trophy for the sword because he wins the sword, and of course Adhemar wins the joust. And this is where they're standing next to each other, and Adhemar basically uses a phrase that he uses a couple times over the course of the movie, which is that Will has been weighed, measured, and found wanting. So he's just totally full of himself. And Will is just pretty pissed off standing next to him, to the point where he doesn't want to compete in the sword anymore, even though it's his best event, because he becomes a little bit obsessed with taking down Adhemar. So Will gets a little bit myopic in his intention going forward.
I think also jousting is the top event of the
It's the most lucrative. Yeah, it pays out the most as well.
Yeah.
Because it's the most dangerous.
Well, and then so this is where after the tournament, there's going to be a banquet in the evening, and Will initially is not going to go. And then, of course, Jocelyn's aide shows up and asks him what color tunic he's going to be wearing. And that's a fun scene because Roland he doesn't have a tunic, of course, but Roland is staring at it's like some drapery that's right behind her.
Tent.
It's the tent, the other side of the tent. He just starts describing the color of the tent flap. And then, of course, that's what he uses to make the tunic. For Will, and there's another fun moment where they have to try to teach him to dance, and so he's trying to learn how to dance, and so that's just a good moment of camaraderie. It's also the moment where I think the blacksmith becomes a kind of a full member of the crew, because Kate ends up participating in the dance training with them. So that's just kind of a fun scene.
It is, yeah.
Well, so they get to the banquet, and there is another kind of funny moment where so Adhemar is. Do you think he's in this scene? I don't know if he's just trying to mess with him or if he suspects that maybe Will is not Ulrich, because he basically challenges him to show them a dance from his you know, from Gilderland, where he hails from. And you kind of see, this is kind of a funny moment, because Heath Ledger's then walking out, and he's just sort of like twisting his arms. You can tell he's not sure exactly where he's going with it. And then luckily, Jocelyn jumps in and comes to his aid. And then magically, everybody knows how to do the same dance move at that point. But and this is where it
I
does
always love that.
And yeah, and this is where it does the golden years transition. And apparently what you realize is that everybody at the banquet is a professional dancer. So that's always a fun moment. Yeah. It's like the Grease high school scene.
I mean, I love this scene a lot because of the music and how it transitions from like very formal, courtly sort of medieval dance into this very hybrid modern medieval dance. And they look like they're having a lot of fun. And it's actually, they're dancing well. Like, it's really cool. And it goes perfectly with the music. Great scene. And I do think that Ulrich did that to show him up because he suspected that he's not who he says he is exactly. And then, of course, he sort of storms out because he's been one-upped.
Right.
Everyone's loving this dance.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Somehow
they just wanted, he wanted to make fun of him. He's just trying.
Well, he failed.
He did. He failed. And that whole scene just, it's just the, you know, again, I love that song, love Bowie. And like you said, everybody looks like they're having a great time. And it's just that positive energy just comes straight through to you as a viewer.
Yeah. They're all like whooping and hollering at the end. It's great. It's really fun.
I always love the good high school dance scene.
You know, by the end of this podcast, I'm going to believe that this was a high school movie.
It's working.
So the other thing that's happening during this time is that, so Kate has taken upon herself to forge some new armor for Will. And it's kind of funny because it's a very, what would you call it? Minimalist armor, I guess. It's sort of it's a slimmed down version compared to a lot of the other competitors in the field.
It's light and agile.
Yeah, it's light and agile.
But stronger.
Yeah, so she does actually put a Nike swoosh in there.
Two.
Right? So
Two of them,
yeah. And apparently that might have been I think that was a product placement deal. I think I read that.
It was.
So that's the one, out of all the anachronistic shit that they do, that one feels forced to me. That's the one thing that feels forced. The rest of it, I think, mostly works.
Who's Nike's CEO?
Phil Knight. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Although they did not make that connection prior to them making this decision to have it in the movie, apparently.
Yeah. Well, I liked it.
No, it was good.
I think it's classic. It's just like, oh, yeah. There you go.
Yeah, I think it's funny. And then I love branding. The fact where, so then they decide, you know, he's questioning. He's like, oh, this is too small. It's not going to work. And then there's this fun moment where they're like, let's test it. And how they test they have something on like a big log on a rail that they bring and they just ram into his chest and they knock him like 10 feet backwards. And then he's laying there and he's all excited and happy. He's like, I didn't feel anything.
The one thing I think was missing from that scene where they tested out the armor was little Ashes running around going, ramming speed.
But this is also like, this is the sports movie where you have the like whatever the trick that's in get him past the top guy.
Oh well, when he like goes out with his new armor on, and all the other knights are like totally laughing at him.
I know.
And then he just like glides up onto his horse, and then they all stop laughing. Like, oh.
Well, I do love the fact that in that scene when he's walking, you know, and everybody's mocking him. He's not, you know, you think initially maybe he's like, oh, he's feeling slightly embarrassed. But there's more kind of a, like, fuck you edge to it, right? He's like, I'm good. Like, there's a cockiness or a confidence that, you know, as he walks forward and jumps on his horse that I think is pretty great. So from here, they go to the next tournament. And this is where he actually does end up facing off. So Will ends up facing off directly against Cornish.
Colville.
Oh, Colville, sorry. So Colville, and this is where, so Adhemar is supposed to face Colville first, and what Adhemar finds out is that this is, of course, the Prince of England, and apparently, you know, the risk is that if you injure a member of the royal family, that could go bad for you. So Adhemar ends up withdrawing because he does not want to face off against him, and Will is then up next against Corville, and he finds out in advance that it is actually the Prince, but he sees him across the field and he decides to ride against him anyways. And then there's a really nice moment after that where they come together on horseback and they're talking and he says, Your Majesty or the Prince, or I forget what phrase he uses. But at that point, this is where the, you know, Prince Edward is satisfied or happy. The fact that, you know, he asked him, he's like, oh, you knew that it was me and you rode against me anyways. And this is where they have some back and forth where he says that, you know, it's not in my nature to withdraw. And so they have a nice moment, a nice connection, which of course pays off super nicely when they get to the stockade sequence at the end of the movie.
Game recognizes game.
Yeah. And then Adhemar is called back to the front, so he actually has to go deal with some actual warfare. So he's off the tournament circuit for a while, and you know this definitely frustrates Will, but he ends up cleaning up on the tournaments. So he must be like, at one point, I don't know how Adhemar is getting the tournament results shipped to him, like a newspaper or whatever, but someone goes to the front and gives Adhemar all these, you know, documents that show that Will or Ulrich is just cleaning up left and right in all of these tournaments, all the jousts with him not being there.
He has the ESPN app.
It's the medieval ESPN app. Well, and then so from here, they go to another tournament. This one's in Bordeaux, and they tell Will that the guy that he's facing down against is somebody who was he taxed the people, twice over to try to pay for this tournament. And so then Will really knocks this guy off his horse, not only knocks him off his horse, but knocks him through the, whatever you call the jousting divider is. So that's the rail. There you go. That's a pretty good hit. And then this cuts to then one of the funny scenes where, so Will is going to try to compose a love letter to Jocelyn. And this is where he's with his mates, and the back and forth on this one, some of the dialogue here is just great, because is it Roland that actually says, oh, say something about her breasts?
I think
or is it Watt? I don't know.
I'm not sure.
But then
the love letter by committee was really funny.
Yeah, the love letter, it's just great, because everyone's throwing in their piece, and some of them are, you know, just mentioning things that happened when they had, you know, someone unrequited love or someone they were lusting after. And so, and then Chaucer, of course, is taking all the input and fashioning it into this really, really effective letter that Watt ends up taking to Jocelyn. But one of my favorite lines of the movie is where, you know, Will says, you know, something about her breasts. Chaucer says, well, you might want to, you know, think about something a little bit higher. And then his answer is her throat. So and Chaucer is nicely trying to say, well, you might want to, you know, maybe her mind or, you know, a little bit face, whatever, just, you know, try to guide him in the right direction. So all of that and the Chaucer stewardship of the letter is a lot of fun.
Yeah, I like it a lot. I also really like when Watt comes back and gives Will little token. I kept thinking it was going to be like, is it going to be like her panties or something?
Oh, my.
No, he kisses him. And then, yeah, Watt's like, kisses him on the lips. And then William's like, oh, yes, yes, yes.
I know. Initially, that's he's funny. Stunned and surprised, but then he kind of, you know, takes it for what it was intended in terms of the meaning, and then, yeah, he's jumping around. So that's a lot of fun. And I guess the answer that he was looking for, too, was he was trying to get her to come to Paris for the tournament, and so what he learns is that, yes, she is going to come to Paris. But Adhemar is not at Paris, and so there's a scene where they're in a bar, and they end up making a bet against some Frenchmen. So there's some back and forth, French versus English. They're kind of bagging on each other, and the Frenchmen say that any member of or any Frenchman is going to win instead of Will, and they bet 50 gold florins. By the way, I did try to do a lookup on, you know, what a florin would be worth in terms of modern day. You know, I couldn't find a good answer on it. So did you guys do any research? Like, I'm not sure how many. What is 50 florins? What's the equivalent in today's dollars? No idea.
No idea.
Yeah, what's the inflation rate? You know,
1-to-1.
650 years ago.
Right.
Like, yeah. I'm guessing it was a lot.
Right.
Yeah. I remember looking briefly during Princess Bride and gave up quickly because they talked about florins and stuff.
Yeah. I tried. I couldn't find anything solid.
Yeah. Nobody cares.
Yeah. What's funny is, so they make the bet that, so they take the bet, you know, Ulrich is going to clear the field. He'll be the winner. It's 50 gold florins. And then, you know, Will goes to see Jocelyn in a church. By the way, I do like his entrance into the church, because she walks in and there's a vat of holy water, and, you know, she touches it and does the holy water ritual, sign of the cross or whatever it is.
Sign of the cross.
Yeah, sorry.
Marcus, a little input, please. Yeah,
I'm not the most religious guy, so I'm going to be a little bit out on a limb here. But then I do love that Will goes into the church and he dips his hand in the water and he uses it to slick back his hair. So I just
a little touch up.
Yeah, just a little. I like that. And then he, of course, walks over and talks to her, and she is so excited by the letter that he sent and asks him to, you know, give her some poetry and use that same sort of flowery language. And this is where he just starts fumbling and stumbling around, and he tries to talk about her breasts at one point, and she's just sort of horrified, and he says, I'm going to win the tournament for you. And then she challenges him to lose the tournament in her name.
I like this. I like the scene, how he filmed this scene, because it's most of it is all very wide shot. And you see the two of them like sort of like very at a distance to each other and as they walk through the cathedral. But it's all like, you know, the camera is just like either moving like left or right following them. And it's all wide. It's really, really well done.
Yeah, they show him like trying to like get closer to her and she backs away. And it just shows the distance between them really well.
Yeah. So, and initially he's like, you know, fuck that. It's like, I'm not going to lose this tournament. And he sort of storms off. And then you cut to him on the field. And the horses start, his opponent starts on the jousting field, and he's just sitting there. He's like, ah, shit. And then so there's this great sequence where he probably takes like, I don't know what, 7 or 8 good hits or something, just you know, getting his ass kicked as he's sitting on his horse. And so that's pretty fun. I mean, he's definitely taking his punishment to show his love for Jocelyn.
But she was all excited about like, oh, he really does love me, and gets like whacked with the joust and like knocked on his ass.
It's like, how much punishment do I have to take before you realize?
Yeah.
And then she's like, okay, enough. He's go out and win.
Yeah, now you can win.
Yeah.
So, he's back at the tent preparing for, you know, what's going to be just another beating. And the aide comes and says, now she wants you to win the tournament. And he's like, oh, finally, thank God. And then when he gets into his, I think it's his very next joust, actually, this is where he knocks the guy's helmet off of his head. He hits him so hard, and you see the helmet fly into the crowd. And of course, it's another modern day sports reference, right? Because people are jumping for the helmet like it's a baseball coming in, you know, like a baseball home run. So I think that was just kind of fun. I like that.
It was really good.
And then afterwards, he's laying in his tent and Jocelyn comes and they end up banging it out. But before that, so
nice.
So, but before that, you know, he's laying there and you do see the impact that or the damage they took because of the jousting. And so, you know, his body is all bruised up and he's hurt.
Yeah, they had him earlier in like a contraption, like either, I don't know if his arm was in it, like in his sock and they need to pull his arm out of his sock or whatever. And then like dislocated shoulder or something. Some medieval contraption looked like a torture device.
Yeah, they were doing some medieval medieval work, stretching his arm at one point. Yeah.
That's what they called going to the chiropractor back in 1356.
Yeah.
Yeah, with just a little stretching, just yank hard enough.
Yeah, and then so from here, this is where they move on to the world championships. I do like the fact that it was the world championships of jousting, right? That was kind of fun, right? Again, just more somewhat anachronistic sports. Yeah, so they're on a ferry and they're crossing over to England, and this is where they all talk about, oh, how long has it been since you've been in London? And it's, you know, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, and for Will, it's been 12 years, and he has sort of this haunted look on his face, and this is a moment where you get a flashback too. So you see how it was that Will initially became a squire for a knight, and you see his dad taking him down to a knight. And I mean, how old do you think the kid is at this point? Maybe like 7 or 8, something like that.
He's like, eight.
Yeah. So 7 or 8. And so his dad is taking him down there and he's basically trying to give him a better life, but he does end up, you know, basically just leaving his kid with this knight to go be a squire with the idea that, you know, I think at that point, who knows if he's coming back or not. And then this is, of course, another opportunity for Adhemar ends up, I think that they're preparing for the final tournament. And so they're up front and they're standing together and, you know, Adhemar compliments Ulrich and says that, you know, he's won trophies, horses and women in Adhemar's absence. And, there's some good back and forth dialogue in terms of, he's like, do you usually put them in that order? And I do like this moment because Adhemar's just sort of like, well, yes, of course, right? Trophies, horses and then women. And the other thing that Adhemar says here is that he's actually talking to Jocelyn's dad, so he's trying to negotiate a marriage deal, and that gets Will all pissed off. So I do like the back and forth between these characters throughout the movie. I think it works pretty well.
Marcus, how is this a high school movie now? When you're negotiating with the father?
That's a tough one. Maybe you got like a deal going on the side.
I think it's you're trying to convince the girl's best friend to get her to accept your proposal to go to the dance. How's that?
Possible. The marriage and asking the dad and arranged marriage isn't quite a high school scenario. I did like the line. I think he was talking, I think it was around here, where Adhemar was talking to his aide. And he's like, how would you beat him? How do you? He's like, I would beat him with a stick while he slept.
Yeah. That was a good line.
Yeah, he's like, jousting, I don't think we can.
Yeah, so William ends up going to his old neighborhood, which they call Cheapside. Yeah, so he goes to Cheapside, and he finds a little girl And he's asking her, so he's assuming that his father is dead at this point, and he's asking her, you know, do you remember a man? And she kind of looks at him and says, oh yeah, I know, he still lives over there. And he sits by the window and he's blind. And then there is a, I don't know, I think this is a genuinely heartfelt reunion moment for me. Like, I actually, it tugged on my heartstrings a little bit. I have to admit that.
I admit too. It was a very touching reunion. Yeah. I really do. Like, I got a little tear in the corner of my eye.
Yeah. As, you know, so his dad, because I'm sure.
Marcus did not.
Yeah. No, I thought it was really good. I did.
Yeah. It's a super nice moment. And they sit together and there's a leak in the roof. And, you know, Will says he's going to go out and fix it because he's a Thatcher by trade. And this is where the one thing that I think there is a little bit of a plot hole here, because Adhemar has apparently been following him. And this is how he comes to the realization that Will is pretending to be a knight as opposed to somebody who actually has that lineage. Was there anything in the movie that I missed in terms of why at that particular moment Adhemar would be following him, or just a convenience of plot?
I think he didn't know. I think the one connection was there was no way that he would be able to beat him. And so he needed to find a way to beat him, right? Because he did ask his aide on how would you beat him? And he's like, you can't. So they got to like figure out a different way.
So you think
they didn't connect it.
Yeah. I mean, look, he always suspected that Ulrich was not who he said he was. And so now I think he had the opportunity to pay someone to follow him and spy on him. And I think that person then said like, oh, what's he doing over in Cheapside? I better go get Adhemar. Yeah. And now he's like, wait a minute, what's he doing up there in like this cheap side of town? And now he's like climbing up onto the roof. Like, okay, he probably just asked around. It's like, oh, that's William Thatcher.
Yeah.
He's the Thatcher's boy.
Well, and so from here, so Will goes back and he's getting ready to basically participate in the championship jousting match. And Chaucer comes to him and says, you know, you've been exposed. There are a group of royal guards that are waiting to arrest you. And so basically his entire crew begs him to run at that point and just, you know, just take off. And even Jocelyn is there and says that she'll be with him and she'll love him no matter who he is, and they'll be together. And at this point, Will's is having none of it. He's fuck it. He's just going to go take it like a man. He proclaims he's a knight a couple times. And so they make a decision as a group, because Will is going to go just face up to it, and he knows he's going to get arrested. And this is another scene that I really do like in the movie, where as a group, they decide, no, they're in this together. And so there's a fun moment where they all go walking out straight into what, you know, they're basically Will's arrest for sure. I'm not sure why everybody else didn't get arrested, but Will himself gets locked up because of it.
So here's my question.
Yeah.
Does anyone really think that Jocelyn can live the life of a poor farmer? Because no. I'm pretty sure she'd be out in under a year.
Oh, I was thinking more like 3 months, actually.
Okay, yeah. Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
She's like, wait a minute, I don't get all these outfits and hats.
Yeah, she would have no place to hang her lampshade hat.
She's like, why do I smell all the time?
You know, the other thing I think is sort of interesting about this scene that I hadn't noticed before is that when the guards go up to arrest him, I don't think the horse was aware that it was going to happen, because if you watch that scene, it really spooks the horse. And there's a second where the horse kind of steps back, and you see like one of the guards steps forward and you know, grabs the horse's rein and kind of gets it back under control. So I was wondering if one of those guards was a horse wrangler in disguise.
Yeah, I did read that the Brian Helgeland did not tell the horse what exactly was going to happen to so get that natural surprise.
Marcus, don't tell you. The horse.
Sorry. I was thinking the same thing. Like, really, Dave? Do you really think don't tell the horse?
Well, let me say it a different way. Maybe they didn't rehearse it appropriately. So, although, you know, I mean, I don't know, maybe. You guys don't know what that horse's acting method is. Maybe he needs to understand exactly what's going to happen in the scene. So
they just wanted the horse to stop yelling, line!
Nay. All right. And then from here, so there is a brief scene where Adhemar goes and finds Will when he's in some sort of a cell somewhere. And he, again, hits him with the, you know, weighed, measured, found wanting. And each time he hits him with a stick. So, you know, Will takes a few more shots. But as it's been proven throughout the movie, you know, Will can take a lot of damage and keep charging.
I was just wondering during that scene, you know, because his arms are like all strapped to this log that he's got across his shoulders. He could have easily just like swung around and just like knocked Admar in the head, just brained him. Why didn't he?
Probably at that point he'd be arrested for murder, and it'd be a difficult time when the guard shows up and they're like, "What happened to that dead body over there?"
Would have been a very different end of the movie.
Can you imagine that, like an alternate end to this movie where they walk Will out and hang him, and then the credits roll? Credits.
No, they wouldn't hang him. They just like they take him out and they have a firing squad
drawn and quartered. Maybe
here's another anachronism.
Electric chair.
Gotta wait for lightning. And then from this goes to probably maybe my favorite scene in the movie. So this is where there's a scene where Will is in the stockades, he's in a public square, and a group of people show up and they start, you know, taunting him. I think it's just maybe sport to go there and bring vegetables and throw them at the guy in the stockades. I think it's just entertainment maybe for everybody. Yeah. It's not like they necessarily have anything bad against Will. I think it's just the opportunity is there.
Wait, you've never done that with your kids?
The thing is, we had to retire our stockades, so haven't been able to use that for a while. So,
just gather up your lettuce, go down to town, and you throw them at whoever's in the stockade.
Yeah,
it's a good Saturday afternoon.
But I love this scene. So James Purefoy just crushes this scene. I just love this because there's two things I really like about this. So the first one is just the loyalty of the men themselves in terms of they're trying to protect Will, and they're all trying to use their own elements of their personality and their character to do that. Like, you know, the blacksmith, she has her hammers. Chaucer tries to use his voice to influence the crowd. Watt's basically just ready to just beat the shit out of everybody. And everybody's basically standing with him. But then, so this is the moment where, you know, Purefoy reveals himself to be Prince Edward. And he basically, you know, walks up and he's talking to him, and he compliments him on who he is in terms of being a knight, and that he, you know, he tilts when he should run, and that's knightly too. And I love his dialogue. But then what I really love is that he decides, you know what, fuck it, I just want him to be a knight so I can watch him joust Adhemar. And so he comes up with this bullshit about the fact that he's from an ancient royal line, and he turns to the crowd, and one of the things, I love the way he says, "This is beyond contestation," and the way that he delivers that line, I just love it. And that, and you know, the casual "take a knee," that whole scene just totally works for me. That's a scene that I've just have jumped back onto YouTube to watch just randomly once in a while because I like it so much.
Somebody's got a man crush.
I do on that scene. Hell yeah! I mean, I think it's
Dave just, wants to be knighted.
Well, not really. So, not sure it would get me anything. But I just, you know, and there's a couple, I think what I like about that is it's the relationship that has been established in the movie it's a super nice payoff between Prince Edward and William. The fact that obviously William gets to use his name. And then I really think that the Heath Ledger in that moment, his acting really sells the Will character in terms of, you know, he has kind of the wide eyed when he thinks he realizes what's going to happen. And then he has the excitement at the end. So I don't know. I just love that scene.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a great scene.
Awesome scene.
The senior in high school bestows his confidence in the freshman. You can go out there. You can do it.
You know, because of all
you can do it.
Because of all your rambling, Marcus, I just decided what movie we're going to do next. So, So from here, this leads to, you know, the big showdown moment. So this is the game 7 in the World Series, or, you know, last 2 minutes of the Super Bowl, but however you want to characterize it, right? This is the final jousting moment. And so,
Final match.
Sure enough, Will is squaring off against Adhemar, and you find out that Adhemar is a cheating bastard because he ends up tipping, or instead of the end of his lance, he puts a, you know, like a fake shell on it with a super sharp point underneath it. And
it's nothing but spun sugar and boot black.
Yes.
And then she tells him like what it is, and then he like crushes it, and then you see the point inside. All great for the audience, but I think the girl who brought it to him is like, "What the fuck? Do you know how many hours it took me to make that?"
I know.
And by the way, I don't have another one.
I thought that was the same sample thing, actually. Yeah. So after the first ride, you know, Will ends up with probably about, I don't know, like a 2x4 through his shoulder. I mean,
that was pretty brutal. And that was the spear that just went into him. I don't know how he'd have a hole in him, like the size of a Coke bottle.
Right.
It just didn't seem.
Well, no, I mean, it was a splinter from that, but yeah, it was like fairly deep.
It looked like it was huge.
It was like two, 3 inches deep.
Yeah, I mean, and 2 to 3 inches wide. I mean, it's a, I mean, there's no way that you keep going if you got that chunk of wood stuck in
you. Well, he couldn't even like hold the lance.
Right. Yeah. Like
I'm pretty sure he'd bleed out. But
there was a surprising lack of blood. I will say that.
Yeah. At the end, he has on his shirt, he has just a little tiny spot of blood, about the size of a quarter or so. That's it. That's all the blood you see.
But it did encourage him to, he can joust with no armor. So he got the final run, taking his armor off and strapping the lance to him.
Yeah, I would say because he tries a second run against Adamar and he can't even hold onto the lance he can't lift it up because his shoulder is injured. And that leads to the last dramatic moment where he decides that he's going to take off his armor and they have to actually lash the lance to his arm so that he can pick it up. What's great, by the way, is at the end, you see him leaping over the rail in the jousting ring, and he's using both arms to do it. Right?
No problem.
Yeah,
so he's fine now.
Yeah, but you know, of course, it's this nice dramatic moment. But then, another thing I like about this scene is, so the Chaucer character sees that they're still getting ready, and he sees the guys about to drop the flag for them to start, and so then he gets up and he delays the crowd long enough with yet another, you know, speech at the last moment. And this is not one that is overly flowery. It's just kind of nice because he ends up recognizing William as somebody who's a local boy done good. And he ends up, you know, he uses his real name, which is his dad is now in the stands and gets to hear that. And that's a nice moment.
Yeah, that was good.
I want to see the second alternate ending where Will actually gets speared by the lance. Because he has no armor on, and it's just like and it goes like all the way through him,
like out his back,
and his body tears apart, and then Jocelyn like she's like no,
and you see like a big splash of blood on Jocelyn's face.
Oh yeah, it's like the Game of Thrones with the mountain and the viper, where you think the viper is like totally gonna win, and then all of a sudden he gets his head crushed. By the way, Indira Varma in that scene, when she lets out her screech, is probably the best on-screen scream I've ever seen. It is like, oh, wow, that's awful.
It's been a while since I've seen it, but I'll take your word for it.
Oh, great scene.
So then, then the last heroic ride, which, you know, I was goofing on when we were doing the intro, there is a moment where William yells his own name as he's charging at the end, and he raises the lance, and he, of course, knocks Adamar off of his horse. I did think the way that they filmed this scene was kind of a little strange, because he hits him, and Adamar is laying on the ground, and then there's a fun scene where everybody comes and is looking over him, looking down on him, and saying, you know, it's each of Will's crew, basically. You know, you've been weighed, you've been measured, and you've been found wanting. But then after that scene, it cuts back, and you see just one more, like they replay the jousting hit, which...
Yeah,
that was. I'm not quite sure why they did that or if it was needed, but I don't know.
I think the reason was that it would have looked really strange to see, you know, because he doesn't have any armor on. Like they could not get the lance like anywhere near him. So the way that it was like they cut away before they actually got close, and then they cut back and it's like from a different angle. So you can't really see where Adamar's lance is. Because to me, it looked like it almost like, oh, did he hit Will at all? But it was just Will's lance that was exploding. And Adamar basically like drops his lance. It's not even anywhere near Will. So I think they were just trying to hide that.
Yeah. But it ends up being kind of a weird moment in terms of the film progression, don't you think? Do you think it kind of is sort of odd to have the, you know, the sequence of them looking down on him, and then all of a sudden it just cuts back and replays the ending?
I thought so. I thought the same thing. I thought, like, they showed it, and then, like, oh, why are they showing it again? Was he dreaming this, like, as he was falling or something? Or
They're, like, repeating what happened when Will got knocked off his horse by Adamar the first time. And he, you know, he sort of, like, blacks out and then goes back and has the vision of his father, right?
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with it. Yeah. Was it a little bit strange? Sure. Was it a little clunky? Probably, but I still don't have a real big issue with it.
No, that's a good point, actually, about the filming technique, because, yeah, this was, as I mentioned earlier, the stunt doubles did take a fair amount of punishment when they were filming this movie.
For sure.
Yep, and then, so at the end, so Jocelyn is super excited that Will has won. The crowd goes wild. Will jumps over. Will actually, you know, a little spot of blood on his shoulder. And his arms are pretty useful at that point. So he's able to use it to scale the rail and give Jocelyn a hug and all that. So maybe Will has a healing factor. Maybe that's what it is.
He was like Kurt Schilling in the bloody sock. It was all fake.
Yeah. Fuck Kurt Schilling. Fuck that guy.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're basically at the end. By the way, I did not know this after all the times that I've watched this movie, but did you know that there is an after credits sequence?
Fuck, really?
Yeah.
Is there?
No.
Yeah, I did not stick around.
Yeah, I didn't know that either until I was doing research on the movie. And apparently it was a scene that was in there, and the studio wanted it cut, and Brian Helgeland fought to keep it in there. And what it is it's a farting contest between all of Will's crew.
Probably worth cutting.
And apparently it was they just did it for fun. Like the actors themselves just did it. It wasn't, you know, it was just sort of a spontaneous moment with them having fun together, and they ended up filming it. I'm assuming based on the sound effects though, that those farts were not real, because I will say that Kate ends up crushing it. So she wins.
Well, yeah. I'll have to go back and watch it.
Yeah. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not anything great, but it's strange that it's existed all this time and I had no idea that it did. So there's probably a lot of people out there that didn't know that. So if you guys want to see 30 seconds of farting, just watch the end credits or wait around after the credits for the end of A Knight's Tale.
Probably wise it was cut.
All right. What else you got? Random trivia. Anything else you want to talk about?
Well, did you mention just that it was a come from behind victory at the end?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's right. Because he had to, he was
down 2 points. He had to unhorse him.
Yeah. That was the only way he could win was to unhorse him.
Yeah, the unbelievable shot was needed.
That's right. He needed his Doug Flutie moment, basically, is what you're saying.
The Hail Mary.
Yep. Exactly.
I surprisingly have no trivia.
Yeah. The only thing that I noted was that, because I, again, found it on research, but didn't even really see it, is apparently when they're doing a flyover of London, there is a model of the London Eye, like that's made in, you know, as if it was, you know, constructed in the 14th century.
Oh, I have to go back and look at that. I was, because I think the river was over off to the right, and I was just sort of like focusing on the stadium.
Yeah, me too, actually. So I didn't end up seeing it, but, and apparently, although
they didn't get their money's worth.
It was just in there, yeah, it was just in there as a joke, and apparently it was several $1,000s to create that model, so...
Yeah, I read 500,000.
Oh, 500,000? What? Really? That much?
Yeah.
No fucking way. Well, to do the entire model or just for
it
might the have been
for the entire London. I read it as the eye when I read the thing, but maybe it was a whole model.
That but would either be, way, that's that would a be lot crazy of, for something that you never see. Like,
there's nothing even important about the movie. Like, you could have just done a map, and you know that's what they did in Raiders.
No wonder.
Ah, fuck it. Just do a map, and
we'll make it cheap. This film cost like $67 million, right?
Yeah.
The other thing is, like, you know, you wonder, like, I don't think it really looks like they spent $67 million on it, but I hear they have a duplicate of it back in Hokkaido.
They made two.
It's interesting you say that because the set design and some of the overall production design, it's kind of right on the edge between, you know, being pretty good realistic and then being and slightly fake, right? So it's almost, it has a little bit of the... not quite as bad, but the you know, the Princess Bride, the sword duel, like that sort of that sort of aesthetic. There's a little bit of that there, but it's not quite that, you know, cheesy or because I do think it looks good, and I actually think the costuming in particular is really well done in this movie.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It does have that very similar vibe to Princess Bride, and it's not quite the polish, which is fine. Like, you don't need it in the movie, but that's why I was surprised by the budget. Princess Bride budget was only $16 million.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of it. I think it ultimately works, but I don't know if it was like intentional or they sort of like scrimped where they needed to and sort of focused on the things that they really wanted to focus on. Like,
the budget's probably all in the music.
True. That's a good point.
Yeah, but what, 4 or 5 like top songs?
Yeah.
Yeah, all the scenery feels appropriate for the tone of the film. So it feels like it does work, but it definitely doesn't feel like they were going for to make it truly authentic either.
Yeah.
So but, of course, there's all the horses that they killed. They had to pay for it. No animals were harmed in the filming of this movie.
I'm not sure if I believe that. Horses love falling onto their back and kicking their legs up in the air.
Well, there's the mental trauma of being surprised.
So what do you think about, what's the idea in terms of horse speed? Like, how do you get your jousting advantage? Do you want to be going that much faster? Because then that also makes it more difficult for you to land your lance, right? If you're going too fast.
I think you need to build up that kinetic energy.
You want to get the power to knock him off his horse.
Yeah, so it really, it all comes down to the horse more than anything else.
Well, no, the skill of the rider. I mean, you
got to hit him in the
lance
in the
placement.
Right spot. You got to accuracy, fearlessness.
I did like the line. I forgot who gave the line when they were talking about how to take out Adamar. It's like, it's a small target, but aim for his heart.
Yeah, that was a good line, actually.
that was good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Clever.
All right. Well, I've said everything I wish to say about A Knight's Tale. You guys got anything left?
I've said more than I ever thought I would.
Colin, anything else?
Nope.
All right. Well, let's get to our closing thoughts then. And Marcus, why don't we have you go first, since you're the big downer when it comes to this movie?
It's not a downer. I do think it's a fun movie. I think it's worth watching. I just don't hold it in high regard. Throw it on. It's a good movie to enjoy. It's lighthearted. It's good action, good sports movie. It could be a teen romantic comedy set at a high school. Happens to take place in medieval times. France and England. And jousting is the sport. But fun movie. Worth watching. I would give it a solid B. For what it is. Doesn't make my top list of all time, but it's definitely enjoyable.
Colin?
I think it's a lot of fun. It's unexpected. The anachronisms are not just anachronistic, but they, like I said, they really play with your expectations, and they're done very well. They're written, they're both physical and written into the dialogue. It's really helped along by strong performances, a lot of good actors in this. Especially Heath Ledger and Paul Bettany. It's just, this is always like just a fun movie. I can't help but feel good when I'm watching this movie. And that's one of the reasons why it's on my list of the top 238. It's one of the reasons why I wanted to do a podcast on it. I loved it from the beginning. It's still really good. I haven't seen it in probably about 10 years and I was riveted. It's just a really, really good movie. And I'm going to give it... I'm going to give it a B plus A minus.
You always do this, dude. You can't. You have to pick one.
I have to pick one?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll give it a B plus plus.
89.9%?
A minus minus? I don't know.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. I will give it an A minus. How about that, Colin? And maybe that'll take care of the All A right. minus for us.
It is on my list, so I probably should give it an A minus.
Yeah, I mean, I think...
Well, the hard part with the grades is it's all... It's based on what it is too, right? Like a horror movie, I might get an A, but it may not make the top 238, right? So this is a...
Yeah, the grade is based on... You're not weighting movies against every movie ever made, right? This is just... Yeah, exactly. It's the individual movie, the genre, et cetera.
I'm gonna say it's a B plus, but because of the way it makes me feel, it moves into the A minus category.
That's very complicated. Can you break down your algorithm for everybody?
No.
Well, I'll give my wrap up, which is, I think, so A minus is my grade. Pretty much almost everything in this movie worked for me. I think about this movie very fondly. I think it's partially because at the time, the very first time I saw it, I had no idea, or I had what I thought was going to be probably a negative opinion going into it or a negative expectation. And it totally surprised me and just caught me off guard. And I just think that the anachronisms and the way that they put it together, I think it really works somehow. Like I actually, the... You know, like I said, starting with that Queen score in the beginning, you're either into it or I could see it just really bothering you, but totally works for me. I think the cast and the chemistry between the characters in this movie, I think it's fantastic, right? You really do feel like they have each other's back and you buy the dynamic. It's something that just, it really worked for me as a group of characters. I'm bought into the loyalty they have towards Will, towards their loyalty towards each other. I just think it works really well. I think the dialogue is super great. I think it's a fun combination of that, you know, they throw in some of the old flowery language and then immediately, you know, wrap it with some sort of modern reference. And it just makes it fun, kind of catches you off guard. I do think the photography is really impressive. So the stunt work and seeing like the guy going off the horse backwards and sliding on the rail and then falling off the rail. Like, I don't know what stuntman did that, but that's pretty ballsy. I mean, that did not look like it was comfortable. So, you know.
I think that was the stuntman who lost consciousness.
Yeah, exactly. That was a
that was unplanned an unintentional moment.
Yeah. Like, let's leave it in.
Well, so I mean, sure, you're a stunt dude, right? But just imagine like lining up across somebody on a field to do like actual jousting. Like that's kind of crazy to think about in modern times.
Yeah, but you're also thinking, well, it's just pasta.
It's just pasta and balsa wood.
I don't think I'd do it. I'm not a big fan of horses to begin with, but I can't see imagine like lining up against someone else.
Yeah, no, truthfully, charging down. Horses make me nervous. I was in one time, Jesse and I were out somewhere and we hopped the fence. We were on somebody's farm and a group of horses came running up to us. And that's the only time I've ever had that happen. And having a group of horses running towards you, that scared me. I got a little nervous.
They're big animals.
Hey, Dave, what about a group of horses being ridden by huntsmen spiders?
Oh, that'd be equally terrifying and somewhat confusing. So,
yeah, they're big animals.
Yeah, and maybe I'll close out my thoughts. It's Rocky, right? It's Rocky on horses. It's the underdog wins at the end. You know what's going to happen from 10 minutes into the movie, and it's satisfying and fun because of it. So, this is just if you need to pick me up if you're in a bad mood or having a bad day, throw this thing on and just have 2 hours of fun. I really, really like this movie.
That's what I'm saying. It's a feel-good movie. It's just fun. It just
it's a genuinely feel-good movie with some surprising, like emotional. It got to me a little bit. Like I said, the reunion scene, that genuinely got to me. I thought it was good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we are down to, I guess I get to make the pick this time. And because we were sitting here and because Marcus kept, high school this, high school that. You want some fucking high school? We're going to watch Booksmart. That's the next movie we're going to do.
Oh man, I just watched Booksmart. I gotta watch it again and take notes.
Get to watch it again, and we'll specifically do that movie because I think it has one of my favorite all-time secondary characters ever to grace the screen. So there's one performance in particular that just kills me every single time. Talking
about Skylar Gisondo?
No, the woman. I can't remember the character name.
The
crazy one.
Oh shit! Oh yeah. That's actually Carrie Fisher's daughter.
Oh yeah, she is just awesome in that movie. It just cracks me up.
She's the girlfriend of Skylar Gisondo.
Yeah, so I actually think Booksmart is one of the best movies that's been made in the past few years. I actually think there's a lot to like there. So I'm interested in talking about it.
All right, I'll watch it again.
And because Marcus was just high school this, high school that. Yeah, we're going high school. So Booksmart it is. No, I can see Marcus is pretty excited looking at him.
I haven't seen it. I'll watch it.
All right. Well, I think we've reached the end. Hope you enjoyed our mostly positive conversation about The Knight's Tale. Sorry that Marcus is sort of stick in the mud, but it's Marcus. What are you going to do?
There you go. Staying true to brand.
There you go. All right. And with that, this is the Real DMC Podcast. Signing off. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
I'm surprised that nobody told the horse what was going to happen in that one scene. Okay, now listen. Here's what we're going to do. These guys are over here. They're going to walk forward. The horse is like, yeah, okay, I got it.
This is what I want to know.
Yeah.
If Ridley Scott had a horse on the Nostromo and he didn't tell the horse that the chest burster was going to come out, do you think the horse would have like run off the ship and spaced itself?
He would have pulled the ring. He went like right over the rail.
I think it would have surprised the horse.
They're like, sure. Ridley, you probably should have told the horse.
good stuff. Horse actors.